Hello and welcome to this edition of the Golf Channel Podcast with Rex and Lab. Keegan Bradley is the winner once again on the PGA Tour, taking home the BMW Championship in the penultimate event of the PGA Tour season. Keegan became just the third U.S. Ryder Cup captain who won on the PGA Tour after getting appointed to the captaincy, joining Jack Nicklaus and Davis Love III. Rex, good morning to you. What was your reaction to all that unfolded last night at Castle Pines?
I was watching the pregame show, and Brandel Chamblee and Paige McKenzie were having a conversation about this, and Brandel brought up a point that I hadn't really thought about, that maybe in some way getting appointed that Ryder Cup captaincy earlier this year, I think somehow that impacted his confidence. If you look at the way he's played, and I think there might be something to it. It's not as though he's ever, you know, he was a bad player or he was in the tank, but you didn't expect this out of him, the way he's played the last couple of weeks, certainly the way he played at Castle Pines. That to me was an impressive performance based on a couple of things. One, it doesn't seem like the kind of golf course where he would excel at. It seemed like that was going to be a bomber's course. We talked about it in the preview podcast. It was always going to be the kind of course where you would expect a Rory McIlroy or a Scotty or a Xander, someone who could bomb the ball, someone that we saw those sort of eye-popping numbers. That's really not Keegan's game. But, man, he was clutch coming down the stretch.
He certainly was clutch coming down the stretch. As a driver of the golf ball, he has always been one of the best on the PGA Tour. I was a little skeptical of how he could play at Castle Pines because he hits it so high, and height, and not being able to vary your trajectory was sort of the kiss of death at Castle Pines when you're playing it.
I mean, the 5-iron at the last is probably a perfect example of that. Yeah.
Was unbelievable. Just get it up in the stratosphere and watch it drop close to the flag. When you mentioned the Ryder Cup captaincy, and obviously that was a surprise appointment. Keegan Bradley was 19th in the world at the time he was named for the 2025 U.S. Ryder Cup captaincy. We always talk about, oh, you know, maybe he could be a playing captain in the future. We're not going to get into that discussion at this point because it's basically fruitless. We're 13 months from the Ryder Cup being played at Bethpage, but there's no point in projecting ahead. But we have history on our side, Rex, where as soon as a guy gets appointed to that captaincy, his game just falls off, whether it's because of distraction, whether it's because it's sort of a latent acknowledgement that, hey, maybe my best golf is behind him. More power to Keegan Bradley for showing that he can still do it. At 38 years old, competing against guys who are much younger than him, who have not been on the PGA Tour as long as he has, who doesn't have the scar tissue that he's accumulated over his decade plus on the PGA Tour. You look at the trajectory that his career has taken off in just the past couple of weeks, Rex. Barely got into the top 50 of the FedEx Cup race thanks to Tom Kim's collapse on the semis, on the last four holes at TPC Southwind in Memphis. That got Keegan Bradley into the signature events, not so much so he can improve his playing status, but I think also importantly, so he can keep tabs on all of the other great players on the PGA Tour who he's going to want to have on his U.S. Ryder Cup team. I do think it carries weight for those guys in the team room next year, knowing that Keegan's still competitive, knowing that he still can beat these guys, especially in sort of this 50-man limited field like we saw at the BMW.
I think you're right. We shouldn't spin it ahead to the Ryder Cup, but we should certainly spin it ahead to the President's Cup, because where he stands right now, and look, you can make the argument for a lot of guys, and I'm sure we'll get into this in the podcast on Wednesday. You make an argument for a lot of guys to get one of those six captain's picks. I think it's a big sprawling conversation, but you also have to see what's going to happen at Eastlake. There is a theory, there's a universe where he also plays well at Eastlake. And now all of a sudden you're talking about someone that was going to be there in the team room as a vice captain. And instead, maybe he deserves a spot as a captain. I think that'd be a fun conversation as well.
It certainly would be a fun conversation. One conversation that we're going to have, Rex, because Keegan Bradley is all the way up to 10th in the point standings. The automatic qualifiers were just named. That was no surprise that there was no movement on that front. This is the last week to make an impression on Jim Furyk. What do you think? If Keegan Bradley's now up to 10th inside that top 12 bubble where he has not been the entirety of the year, is Keegan Bradley, after winning the BMW, is he now a lock for a pick?
I don't think he's a lock, simply because a lot of other things can happen when you look at that team. I think what Jim Furyk is going to struggle with is old versus new. We had this conversation last week, right, about the idea of how many players are you going to look at because they've historically been part of these teams, Jordan Spieth being the primary example here. We'll go ahead and just name the elephant in the room. How deep are you going to be willing to go for someone like that? My guess is Jim Furyk, being sort of a company man when it comes to these types of things, goes pretty deep. I don't think he goes Jordan Spieth deep, but that suddenly puts Keegan Bradley in a very uncomfortable situation when you start looking at the players around him, he's going to have to pick some young guys anyway, because it started 7. You have Sam Burns, Tony Finau, Russell Henley, as you mentioned, Keegan Bradley at 10, and then Brian Harmon and Max Homa at 11 and 12. We know Homa's not playing well. Brian Harmon didn't play particularly well. He fell out of that top 30, didn't make it to Eastlake. Go beyond that, you start looking at some guys that you probably would want on that team. You look at a guy, your boy Akshay. Akshay didn't get it right. Let's try it again. Chris Kirk is right there at 13th. I don't think it's a matter of Keegan Bradley not deserving a pick. I don't think it's a matter of Keegan Bradley not fitting into that team room. He's going to be captain next year of the team. He's a vice captain this time around. I just think it's going to be such a difficult decision for Jim Furyk to make because of the names, not necessarily because he's got to make 6 picks. It's because of who those 6 picks might be in my mind.
To me, the way that I think about this, Rex, is you don't blow up your plans that you've had for months based on 1 week. And I think back to what Keegan Bradley said at his introductory press conference when he was named the U.S. Ryder Cup captain. And the talk of a playing captain came up in 2025. And Keegan said, I will not put myself in a position in which I would be picking myself. I need to be among the automatic qualifiers, make it easy on myself, earn my spot on that team. And then we can sort of address that later. I don't see why this would be any different now with Keegan Bradley as an assistant captain, especially after a week like we just had at the BMW Championship. Kind of a one-off. You're playing at 6,400 feet elevation. We saw some quirky things. You saw some of the top players not playing well. It's essentially a precursor week, sort of the in-between between the cutoff for signature events and then the culmination of the PGA Tour season with the Tour Championship. I'm not saying that the BMW Championship was unimportant, but Keegan Bradley, by and large, had not done anything in 3 months, and then he pops up. He said he got a swing feel during the Pro-Am and basically flushed it for the remainder of the week. Personally, if I were Jim Furyk, I would pass Keegan Bradley over for a pick again. I know how difficult that would be to do. I know how awkward, Rex, that would be to do, because Keegan Bradley would be in that team room knowing that he was passed over by Jim Furyk and the other assistant captains for one of the 6 wildcard picks. I do think that is probably weighing here. I do expect him to get a pick and play on this team, not just as a vice captain. I would expect him at this point. Yeah, it's really hard to leave off the 11th ranked player in the world. I think that would be really something to stomach, particularly when you don't have all other 6 options playing particularly well at this time. He's going to have a couple of leaps of faith here.
Well, that's the issue that you get to once you start taking the deep dive into this, that, okay, at number 10, Keegan Bradley may or may not be a pick. To your point, you're right. That was a bit of a one-off what happened last week at Castle Pines. It was at elevation, and it's not as though he had been on the radar. At what point, though, are you going to start picking guys, I guess would be my answer, because I just mentioned Max Homa's name, and you sort of scoffed at me like, of course not. I'm with you. At 12 and the way he's playing right now, I don't think Max would even want to be a part of that team. How about your boy Harmon? I mean, he's at 11. So at some point, you got to start picking somebody, don't you?
No, I think that's definitely working in Keegan's favor at this point. Like Sam Burns, to me, is a lock to get one of the picks. He's turned it on here lately. He had another good week at the BMW Championship. Tony Finau is going to be on this team as well. 6 top 15s in recent form. Had a really good summer as well. Then I think after those two is when you can start to make some decisions. Personally, I would take a long, hard look at Akshay Bhatia. He's made a huge jump in the OWGR this year. A really strong June and July got him inside that top 12 bubble. He's one of the best players in the PGA Tour in terms of strokes gained total. There's 3. Then you're essentially picking, Rex, I think, between guys like Billy Horschel, who has President's Cup experience. He had 3 straight top 10s before the BMW Championship, where he had a little bit of a back issue that flared up there. Justin Thomas, he has not been nearly as sharp this summer as he was in the spring. The putter continues to be a question, but at least he got through the Tour Championship, a nice bounce back season in kind of that Jordan Spieth vein, a guy who has experience. I would expect Justin Thomas to be on that team as well. So all of a sudden you're looking at what, 4 or 5 guys there. Then Jim Furyk is going to need to decide, do I want Keegan, who did have a playoff loss earlier this year at the Sony? He wins the BMW. He had a technically a runner-up finish at Colonial, where he wasn't really in the mix at all. He was outside the top 20 in the world ranking before he won this one. Then do you pick a Keegan? Do you pick a Russell Henley, who had top 10s in both summer opens, didn't play particularly well at the BMW? This would be his first cup team at 35 years old. Do you put Max Homa, who was in the mix at the Masters but has not done anything has really struggled with his driver over the past couple months. You have Brian Harman, who has just won top 10 since the Players' Championship in March. Do you put Nick Dunlap, who's 20 years old, has played well in spurts this summer, two wins? Like, if I'm Jim Furyk, I'm leaning into Dunlap. I'm leaning into Akshay. I'm building for the future, making sure those guys get in the system, as opposed to sort of going either to retreads or maybe a couple of reaches in terms of like a Keegan Bradley type.
Dunlap threw me when you mentioned him. He's 28th on the points list right now. Now, to be fair,
because he did not receive points for the American Express.
The American Express win didn't count. So I see what you're saying right there. I think that's a bit of a stretch, simply because of the guys you'd have to jump over who either have experience.
But do you want Nick Dunlap? You want Nick Dunlap, 20 years old, two-time winner this year, or Russell Henley, 35 years old, never played on a Cup team, doesn't particularly know anyone. You have no idea how he would fit with some of the other players. Probably would just be a one-off. It's not like you can count on him for future Cup teams. I think that's probably what the decision is going to be. Do you want a Keegan, who's already assistant captain? Do you want a Henley, who's never done this before? Or do you want a Dunlap, who's 20 and has an entire runway ahead of him?
And your default is always the younger kid that has a runway ahead of him. That's just what you're going to go to. And maybe that's where Jim goes, because we've talked about the President's Cup in the past being a bit of a proving ground for what's going to be next year at the Ryder Cup. Certainly, if you can get Nick Dunlap into the mix, if you can get another young player into the mix, get him to understand what the team atmosphere is like. Get him to understand what the pressure relative to the Ryder Cup is going to be on that first tee. And this is just a different tournament, talking about the Ryder Cup, than anything else you've ever played in before. I get that. I'm not quite sure that's the direction he would go, because again, you've got to jump over a lot of guys to get to that. And at that point, you're telling the world that, look, I had a blueprint and it didn't really matter how everybody played coming down the stretch. That's what it feels like if you make a jump that deep.
Yeah, that's going to be a very tough one to explain away. I think the most interesting player, Rex, is going to be Max Homa, who had sort of covered, he had lingered around that automatic cutoff for the majority of the summer. He has struggled mightily over these past couple of months. Now he's down to 12th in points. He's outside the top 20 in the world ranking. He is obviously immensely popular among his peers. And keep in mind, at last year's Ryder Cup, he was the best player on that U.S. team. You know exactly what you're getting. You can put him with Colin Morikawa and let them go away. I think that is when you look at Jim Furyk's track record as a captain, the type of guys he wants to get in, sort of that bold-faced name, the brand value. I think it's going to be very difficult for him to leave off Max Homa, when I think to you and I, based on current form, it would be a very easy decision to leave him at home.
Hasn't had a top 10 since the Wells Fargo way back in May. He only has two rounds under par in his last eight rounds. He's just not playing well. If you watched him play at all, not only this week, go back to last week in Memphis, I don't think he's enjoying the game. So I get what you're saying. I understand there is some upside when it comes to Max. Certainly what he did last year in Rome would have your attention. But man, I don't know if that's the guy I want in the team room either, because you and I both watched his body language. Just look at the last 2 weeks. That's not a happy person.
No, it's not a happy person. Did not agree to my interview request on Thursday at Castle Pines. I'm still smarting about that as well. What else, Rex, stood out to you about the BMW Championship week? Because to me, it was sort of an odd week, where Scotty Scheffler had his worst ball striking week in more than 2 years. Rory McIlroy tossed his three wood in the water, then broke his driver shaft in the final round. Xander Schauffele did what Xander Schauffele does and finished in the top five at yet another playoff event. Is this sort of like a 1 week thing, or do you think what we saw in Denver is symptomatic of something else going on here?
When it comes to Scotty Scheffler, no, I don't think it's symptomatic. I do think it was interesting that I believe it was Friday when the frustration seemed to boil over the most for Scotty, at least what we could hear from the outside on the telecast looking in. And I get why the attention was focused on the world number one suddenly not really playing or feeling or talking like the world number one. I get why the fascination was there, but I've seen him get aggravated over the course of the last 2 years. It's not as though everything is always roses and rainbows and unicorns on the golf course when he's walking around. He does get aggravated. He does get animated from time to time. Certainly, I think what we saw at Castle Pines was a bit of the extreme. But as you pointed out, it's his worst ball striking round of the year, if not probably the last 2 years, maybe. You could probably say, if you want to go back and take a deeper dive, he didn't do anything particularly well. I get why he's aggravated, because you're coming into a situation where you only really have one more week left. and you need to pour everything into it, and you know your record on that golf course, especially when you're head-to-head with Xander Schauffele. So you certainly don't want to give up the two-stroke lead that you would at least like to have coming in. You don't know how the golf course is going to play different. I get that. He's probably like most of the guys who's ended up going on to East Lake. You're happy, but you're also pretty tired. That stood out to me, but not to the extreme that some others, Adam Scott being the primary example, where he is such this conundrum now. And having covered him at the Scottish Open when he came up just short, it looked like the guy that was 24 years old. And when he was young and you thought he was going to be a world beater and he was going to win multiple majors and everything that was on his horizon, not the guy who is 44 years old, who sometimes looks vulnerable, sometimes looks like he's a bit lost on the golf course. His ball striking was as good as it ever has been. This dials back a couple weeks now where you felt like he got the equipment right. It was the putting coming down the stretch where you're kind of, we sort of focused on the U.S. team when it comes to the President's Cup. When it comes to the international team, the only chance in my mind they're really going to have, with no disrespect to the young players on that team, Tom Kim and Ben On and so many good players, it's going to be the veteran play, because they never get very good veteran play out of anybody. I'm not laying this on Adam Scott or Jason Day or Hideki Matsuyama, but if you are the international captain, if you're Mike Weir, there is a silver lining of hope, a paradigm of hope, as it were, where you have Hideki winning last week. And granted, there was an injury that forced a WD. That's probably a little concerning. And then you have Adam Scott probably playing the best golf he has played in a decade. I don't know. We can go back and look at that. I think that is where, if he could find a way to get a performance out of those two, I'm not saying those two need to go 5-0, but they certainly have to have winning records. And then you're kind of counting on one of the young players doing what Tom Kim did 2 years ago at Quail Hollow. That would be the recipe to have any kind of hope at all for the international team.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you have to absolutely ride your stallions, and you have to ride them as hard as possible. Mm-hmm. They at least have to go 3-2, more likely 4-1. You probably need a 5-0 to pop up there, whether it's Hideki, whether it's Tom Kim, whether it's Sungjae Im. I think when you look at some of the picks, I think a Min-Woo Lee type could sort of inject the same sort of energy that Tom Kim did a couple years ago at Quail Hollow. We'll get into the international team most certainly on that Wednesday. Adam Scott's putting from 4 to 8 feet. On not just, it wasn't even just Sunday, on Saturday as well. I mean, he was making less than 50% of his attempts from 4 to 8 feet when he was making everything of the first two rounds. It was so frustrating. It seemed like this was his tournament to win, and he could not do it. And still, it's great to see Scotty doing what he's doing at the age of 44. As it relates, Rex, to these sort of big four that I would put them at, and sort of the boiling frustration that we saw from Scottie Scheffler. Xander talked about sort of dipping into the patience bucket and what little he has left. We talked about the Rory decapitation of his driver and half-hearted toss into the water, the Hideki WD. I do think this is somewhat symptomatic of a long season that's catching up to these guys. And I'll go back to what Xander Schauffele said a couple weeks ago, where he saw Rory McIlroy playing alongside him at East Lake, and he felt like he was absolutely gassed, and he did not understand how a guy who's essentially a couple years older than he is was blowing past him, just so much fitter than him, had so much more energy. And Xander has taken it upon himself heading into this year to make sure that he is in prime position for East Lake, which it certainly feels like it's going to. I think that's going to play actually a big factor this week at the Tour Championship. You know it's going to be insufferably hot. You know it's going to be take a lot of early week prep, learning a brand new golf course essentially after the work that Andrew Green has done on East Lake. I do think it's somewhat concerning to see at least three of those players in the headspace that they are at the moment, heading into what is a season finale at the end of a very condensed stretch of golf with the majors, the signature events, and the Olympics thrown in there as well.
Well, and it's not only that. It's not just the amount of golf. We run into this pretty much every year towards the end of the season. It's kind of where the golf happened, right? We remember what Memphis was like, just brutally hot. And, you know, it was hot and humid. You guys are having a hard time getting around there. You were there last week. It looks like you've recovered. You're not quite as flush as you were last week when we had the conversation. You've caught your breath and the colors come back to your face. I'm glad. It was a long, hard walk. It was warm. It wasn't hot. And you're right. East Lake will be East Lake, which will be just sizzling hot in that time of year. I just think physically it takes a toll. And that's a really good point. I think when you talk about Scottie Scheffler getting aggravated last week, I don't think you can discount the idea that you're just tired, man. You've been out here. People roll their eyes when you say this, but you're out on the golf course between warm up and warm down in the round itself. Six and a half, 7 hours sometimes. And it's hot and you're trying to be focused and you're trying to do your best. and it's not always easy. There was one more element that I wanted to get your thought on, just because you're probably going to hijack me on today's Golf Today, which you're co-hosting with George Savrikas. Am I right about that?
Correct.
George, you and Georgie, you're probably going to hijack me on this one, so I'm going to throw it at you in the podcast before you have a chance to do it. Ludwig, your boy, had a chance to win again, or at least put himself into serious contention. Is there anything that you're seeing from him on Sunday afternoons when he's in this hunt, like we saw it at the Scottish Open, where he just doesn't get it done?
I mean, at the Scottish Open, he had his worst ball striking performance of the year. I think on Sunday, yesterday at Castle Pines, it was more his par five play. He had absolutely dominated the par fives. He was 12 under par on the longest holes for the first three rounds, played them an even par on Sunday. He just still seems prone to making critical mistakes.
Stop there at the 14th hole. You want to talk about par five play? That was a 414-yard drive. I think he had, a six iron in? A little six iron, yeah. Probably? And he was posing over it, and it never had a chance to cover that water. That water hazard.
I mean, it's just a critical mistake at a very inopportune time, and his short game is not quite good enough yet to bail him out and let him to recover. I think it points to some of the frailties in his game, but I'm also quick, Rex, like I think Xander Schauffele is the perfect example. What's Xander now, 29 or 30 years old? And for years we sort of criticized him for not being able to get over the line, or he's not a fully formed product at this point. And now at this stage in his career, he can run it off. I think we want a lot from these players right away. And Ludvig Åberg has such obvious talent and such obvious tools that I think it's natural to have elevated expectations for him. I still want to give him time at 24 That's years right. old. He just finished his first full year as a professional. I don't think we'll be having this conversation about Ludvig 3 or 4 years from now, where I think he has at least the potential to be a world beater. But right now, there's certainly some weaknesses in his game, and he's just making the wrong decision at the absolute worst time, which I think has cost him and why he does not have a victory yet in 2024. Your thoughts?
Well, when he got the nosebleed on Saturday, I kept thinking, I bet you Lab got one of those. Walking up and down those hills in the thin air, you just kind of like suddenly go, this is happening. Give him credit. I think that was well put. I think when you look at where he is right now in the development of his game, he has to be ahead of the curve for 98% of the players who join the PGA Tour, given his age, given the fact that, less than a year and a half ago, he was at Texas Tech. He was right there alongside his teammates. He was thinking about college golf. He wasn't thinking about pro golf. And you're right, short game needs to get buttoned up. Decision-making coming down the stretch. He certainly has the elements on his bag. His caddy, Joe Scavron, is one of the best in the business. So I think he's doing a good job of keeping his head in it. Again, whatever it is that happened on the 14th hole, though, is endemic of what it seems like happens when he gives himself an opportunity now. And you don't want to read too much into it, because I think it's been less than a year still that he's been on the PGA Tour. And he has wins, and he played the way he played in the Ryder Cup, all of the things that he's been able to do since he was a professional. But you're right. It does show some weaknesses that he needs to develop.
Played well in the major championships this year. Again, just has not gotten it across the line. And to go back at what I said about Keegan, I sort of dismiss Castle Pines as a one-off on this tour schedule. You never see players of this caliber hitting some of the shots and struggling with the distance control like we saw over the weekend. You never see Scottie Scheffler just absolutely explode after missing the green from 80 yards. You never see Ludvig Åberg missing the green with a six iron by 20 yards. You never see Adam Scott with the chance to put a lot of pressure on Keegan Bradley missing the green by 15, 20 yards with a lob wedge. It's just what happens when you play at elevation. And it's so important to nail your trajectory. And you can say, look, if you're controlling your golf ball, you can dial it in. It's still essentially an educated guess that they're making when you factor in wind, when you factor in elevation, when you factor in the temperature, when you factor in spin, when you factor in uphill and downhill. Like, it's essentially an educated guess. I don't think too much of what we saw from Ludvig Åberg, and we should draw anything from that. I do think, Rex, when you look now, it's sort of like the starting strokes. I think Hideki Matsuyama is a huge question mark. He was in second place when he was forced out of the BMW Championship with a back injury. He still did not drop a spot in the standings, which is sort of amazing. He's third overall. We'll begin the week at 7 under par. Rory McIlroy has already played more PGA Tour golf this year than he ever has. That was the case even heading into the BMW Championship. And it just seems like he wants the season to be over with. And yet when you look at his magical starting strokes here, he's just six shots back, the exact same position he was a couple years ago. We will get into that on the Wednesday podcast. for sure. What did you make of any of the other action, Rex, at the BMW, whether it was the race for the top 30 or how things are settling up for Eastlake in the chase for $25 million?
I was surprised, and I think we had this conversation last week, about how much movement there was inside and outside. Well, last week it was the top 50. I think it was five in, five out last week. This week it was four in and four out, and I'm not sure where that ranks, but that's got to be towards the top, at least since we've come into this new era of the FedEx Cup with the way the points are distributed. You just don't see that type of movement. I was a bit surprised at Brian Harman being the primary example where he fell out. And I didn't feel like he played that badly compared to everyone else. I felt like that he probably had an opportunity, but that shows you how thin the margin was for points. And I'm not sure if that's because of the new points distribution with the signature events this year, if it just was the math of the way this time, the way it turned out this time around. But I was a bit taken by the idea that there was a lot of movement there and there was a lot of reasons to pay attention to that movement. It's added a level to these events and a level of interest that normally we don't see this time of year.
Yeah, well said. Justin Thomas is the bubble boy. Got in at number 30 by the slimmest of margins. The four players who got in, Keegan Bradley, Adam Scott, who are obviously in contention for the title, Tommy Fleetwood, the silver medalist at the Olympics that you covered, as well as Chris Kirk, a signature winner on the PGA Tour in the season opener at Kapalua. The four guys who missed out, Brian Harman, Jason Day, Davis Thompson, and Denny McCarthy. To your point, Rex, about the volatility of the points, I can think back to Nick Dunlap in Memphis in the playoff opener where he had a chance to win and then all of a sudden he was backsliding a little bit. All of a sudden, like the top 50 cutoff became quite real for him. Alex Noren was that player at the BMW, just two shots off the lead at one point, ended up bogeying his last three holes and missed out on the top 30. He dropped all the way to like 36th or 37th, which was pretty surprising there. But just some of the mini meltdowns that we saw late, I think always add a layer of compelling drama to the BMW championship, whether it was Brian Harman making double, whether it's Alex Noren bogeying his last three, whether it was Jason Day going triple bogey, double bogey, midway through the back nine to miss out as well. I do love that sort of aspect about the BMW championship. Before we get out of here, we do have to give a shout out to Lydia Ko, your girl, who a couple weeks after completing the Olympic trifecta, claiming the gold medal in Paris, wins the AIG Women's Open in a pretty compelling final round with a leaderboard that is as good as it can get in women's golf with Nelly Korda and Lilia Vu also up there. It seems, Rex, like she has, Lydia Ko has always been like a legendary figure and an icon in the women's game, particularly over the past decade and a half. And yet it seems like she's in an even higher level now, Olympic gold in her first major championship in 8 years.
Probably going to get my hand slapped for this, but I would highly recommend anyone who is curious about this, and everyone should be curious because Lydia Ko is having such a magical summer, to go check out our colleague Beth Ann Nichols at golfweek.com, because she wrote a really good piece just kind of on the reinvention of Lydia Ko. And it's hard to overstate sort of the ups and downs of her career over the last few years, to the point that when she won that gold medal in Paris, I got my Olympics confused. In Paris, I have producers in my ear before she walks up to do the interview about press her for about retirement. And I was a little confused because I was like, she has talked about the idea that she doesn't want to play past 30 years old. This was clearly a seminal and a career defining moment where, you're right, she gets the podium slam, whatever you want to call it, bronze medal, silver medals. She gets into the Hall of Fame. She gets that final point, like all of the things that came together in Paris. And so I sort of tried to press her on the idea that could this be the walk-off song? Could this be it? Okay, let's just drop the mic and walk away. And it was clear she had no interest at all. Her mind immediately went to, no, got St. Andrews coming up in 2 weeks, and that's important to me, and I'd love to be able to win a major championship there and even beyond, about some of the things she wants to do before the end of the season. So the idea that somehow she's coming to the end of her career, I think, has been wildly overstated. She has done just a magical job of going through those peaks and valleys that every professional goes through, but she's done it with such presence and such poise. And it's pretty amazing to watch what she's been able to do, not just this summer, but coming from where she was even just 2 years ago.
I don't know if it's been overstated. She stated it herself. She stated it herself that she wants to wrap up her playing career by the time she's 30. Now, she does regret putting that out into the open, because everything that has happened since then has essentially been colored by the comments that she made about a decade ago. I'm so impressed with Lydia, because I think one of the most difficult things you can do as an athlete is to be a child or a teenage prodigy, and then as a professional, either meet or exceed those expectations. Like, you think of Tiger, LeBron, Bryce Harper, Serena Williams, like those were all very dominant athletes as a teenager. And then they have gone on to decorated careers, some of the best that we've ever seen. Lydia Ko was the greatest teenager in the history of the sport, winning major championships, taking the LPGA by storm, winning more than a dozen events. And yet she stands here now at the age of 27 and she hasn't been broken. Like, yes, she had 3 or 4 years where she was sort of wandering through the wilderness. Yes, she went 8 years without winning a major championship. Yes,
a lot of swing coaches in there, a lot of
caddies and coaches and club decisions, but she has remained perseverant. She has maintained her persistence. She is still as elegant of a person and a player as she has always been. And the thing that I love about Lydia Rex is that she's not long. Like, she doesn't have the length like Nelly Korda. She's not particularly accurate. She's not like a Annika Sorenstam in that respect. She's not the world's best putter that we've ever seen, like Imbi Park. And yet she continually rises to the moment, and she's clutch. And I think that that was apparent over the final hour at the Old Course. The up and down on 16, the three wood into 17, the wedge, and then the left to right slotted with the birdie putt on 18. There's just an art and a gift to Lydia Ko's game that is not always apparent, and yet she'll now go down as a legendary figure in the sport. All right.
Oh, no doubt. I mean, I think I just want to button that up. I think you're absolutely right when you look back at her making the comment about at this stage in my life, and she's not the first professional athlete who has done this. And now to get here, the amazing part is she clearly wants more now, where, all right, 30 was a good number at some point in my life, but she's clearly still interested and motivated to compete at the highest level still.
Three major championships, all three different majors. She has top three finishes in the other two. You wonder, at the age of 27, does she want to try and pick off fourth career major? Is the career Grand Slam still in sights? I actually am surprised that she is continuing at this point. I wouldn't have not have blamed her at all if it was a mic drop moment after getting Olympic gold. I certainly wouldn't be have been a surprise if she walked away after winning the Open Championship at the Home of Golf. Lydia Ko has more to achieve, apparently, and we'll be there to watch and document it. All right. That is going to do it for this edition of the Golf Channel Podcast with Rex and Lav. You guys will drill NBCSports.com/golf for our latest news, notes, and updates. I will be on golf today for the next 3 days. Rex will be joining me on the show at about noon Eastern time on Monday before he heads to hot and steamy Atlanta for the PGA Tour's season finale. Should be a great week. The European and American Solheim Cup teams will be finalized earlier this week as well. We can touch on that, Rex, on Wednesday, since I know you've been poring over some of the bios. All right. Thanks for listening. Thanks for the support. We'll talk to you guys on Wednesday afternoon live from East Lake.
Still waiting on those show notes.